Hi, this is Tom Payne, otherwise known as Jesus from The Walking Dead, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through.
Hey guys, it's Jenna Elfman from Fear the Walking Dead. I play Laura. No, I play Naomi. No, I play June. I play June on Fear the Walking Dead, and you're listening to the Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
That was awesome.
Survivors, and welcome to episode 63 of Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And I'm Mark.
And tonight we will be covering Fear the Walking Dead season 5 episode 12, which is titled Nair Tamid. Before we get started, we have additional feedback for last week's episode, season 5 episode 11. Titled, You're Still Here. So we will start with Rick and Simon.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
All right. So our friend from the internet, Aaron, has some feedback that we have split up. So, Mark, why don't you start it off?
Well, she starts off saying, on the other hand, the stuff with Wes and the mystery manuscript connoisseur, while well acted, was weak to downright confusing. I very much agree on this. First and foremost, if the guy liked the story, why didn't he just ask to keep reading it instead of going through all that to finish it? Actually, I guess the real first question should be, how did he get it to start reading it? He tells Wes, I just wanted to finish it. So he was, was he a friend of Wes's because they fell out or over the book, or did he steal it once before to start it? How did he know Wes even had it? He didn't seem open to talking about it, and the book was finished, so it's not like he was working on it during the apocalypse because he was driven to finish it. And then you have him kill the guy for it, yet walk off the next second saying he could keep it. If he was willing to die for it, what? You do this whole big build-up and then just drop it? So annoying. Also, it felt really convenient that Wes was the painter, so they could use him in multiple plots too, or as well. Sure, financially, I get it saves you casting someone else, but it felt easy that Alicia says 1 week she's going to find the painter, and the next she does.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I think this is one of those examples where the showrunners, define this character, and, then they send it out to, a couple of junior writers on the show who, develop it. And how it works with TV writing, they kind of most writing is kind of done by the basic story strokes are kind of designed in what they call a writer's room. And then the individual writers go out and they'll break the episode out, but then individual writers have to actually write the episodes.
Yeah.
And so what you see on examples like this, because they're crunched for time and stuff like that, you get these inconsistencies, these things that don't quite make sense, where on a macro level, it might have worked, but on a micro level, when you actually look at the episode, it that transition from this, creative guy that been writing on the trees and writing this manuscript, and this cynical guy, it doesn't fit, And like I said it last week, and I still feel the same way after watching it another time, that it's like Wes's manuscript was written by a couple of writers who had some kind of book that they've been trying to sell that they love, and this was an ode to it.
And they didn't read how the plot would actually work out within the story.
Yeah. I mean, writing, you know, let's face it, writing is a tough job. We can armchair quarterback and criticize these guys for the writing, but it's tough. I mean, let's not make it like the whole
process that went behind it. Maybe there's, you know, somebody was getting in the way and was like changing, you know, there could be a lot of different reasons of why some of this kind of is, time constraints. And they're just like, no,
yeah,
that's done. We're moving on.
That's the biggest, that happens, especially in TV, is time constraints. They can't, you know, if they're shooting tomorrow and they're just like writing these scripts the day before, they have to go with what works. And, you know, it can be lots of different things. It could be like budget. It can be like, maybe they come up with a great story, but they can't do it with the budget they have, or, you know,
maybe they had an onset script writer and they just threw something in last minute.
Or like what happened with Austin Emilio, was it last year or two years ago, I guess, with like that one stuntman died, you know, and I don't think we ever saw that scene on The Walking Dead. So, you know, some like real tragedy happened that probably changed whatever they were going to show, because, you know, obviously they weren't going to show that. Right.
No.
So anyway, the point being that things change. This is why it's difficult to make a TV show. And it's not easy. But anyway, let's move on.
I was going to just say, it's like, so, but then what about Game of Thrones?
Game of Thrones is a great example of this, because the one big difference that they have, and I'd say like Star Trek now has, and there's a few other shows that have this, is they have more time, right? Mm-hmm. So they tend to not have these problems or as much, but they still have them, right? It's not like, especially, you know, Star Trek Discovery has had its kind of inconsistencies because of like producer changes and whatnot. Like there's all sorts of things that can happen to make things that kind of not work.
Right. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a fair point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at Swamp Thing. They ended that series and they had a crush, according to Derek Mears, who played the Swamp Thing. They had a crush down three episodes into one, and they did it well, but there was a lot of editing in order to do so.
Definitely.
They kind of worked it out and left it kind of slightly open ended, but the thing was is that they were at their very end. They were supposed to do 13 episodes and they got it down to 10.
Yeah,
think it's worth saying though that, you know, it's easy to armchair quarterback, which is what we're doing, and it's easy to say, you know, well, if I'd done this, I would have written a better, you know, story than this. And I have said that before.
But, we all do it, I think, in the back of our heads.
But it's there's hundreds of people involved. There's time. There's money. There's all these things that get in the way. So
a lot of factors. Yeah.
Yeah. This Wes, you know, character, I think certain parts of that story last week really worked and other parts really didn't. And that whole manuscript thing, I don't understand why. I agree with Aaron there. Like, how do you know about it? Like, were they friends? How did that even happen? It doesn't make any sense. Like, there's like this huge portion of a story there that we don't see. Maybe never will see. And I don't know what to think other than it's an imperfect TV show, which all are, even Game of Thrones, as shown by season 8.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll just continue. She goes on and says, as you said, it was a well-done scene on the actor's part, and I liked that the painter wasn't what Alicia thought, so she had to find her own balance. But it just felt really manufactured and thus took me out of the moment as a whole. She goes on, Steve from Aim for the Head said it well this week when he said this episode was just way too much convenient on everyone's part. From all the guns and the ammo being left at the station, to Strand can't see, but he kind of can to do what he needs to until Alicia changes her mind on killing walkers. And all the way to Wes as the painter, it just felt so easy for the characters, and thus it made the episode boring. I love Alicia and Strand, so I can't say this episode was a total miss for me as much as it was for Steve, but I definitely get his points as I'd probably give this a 6 on the whole, because while some things were interesting, like Wes not changing because Alicia said they were usually paid off in what ways, such as the book left being or just being left by Wes after he all that he did to get it back. Great acting work this week, but the writing is still frustrating. I know these are young writers, but it does not take a genius to know that police station wouldn't have that much ammo left or guns. You would have to have two officers maybe with a great budget to have that much stuff still left, and then assume no looters came by ever, which we know isn't true given the cuts, so people knew things were there. The riot gear being left you could get because it's non-lethal, but even that is a stretch as it's a defensive tool. Still, I believe it's Kyle who says it's all too perfect for the reality of the situation now, as has always worked along with batteries, and they always find what they need when they do so. Things don't get tough for them unless the writers want it to for the drama. Then it just seems out of place. Hashtag rescue Dave Erickson from development hell.
Yeah, I kind of wonder what's going on with him. I haven't heard any news at all. Continuing, Al is going to be too busy wanting to kill Logan over those tapes to help Morgan, I feel. I think that's an accurate description. Because once she finds out what happened, she's going to be pissed. Speaking of those tapes, why is she now putting them in a vault instead of keeping them in her truck? She always has been about having them close by, so what's up? Again, writing for action, not characters. Clearly, the writers just wanted to do something with a bank vault, so they wrote Al using a vault this week. I'll just stop you and say that that was part of one of the Althea tape web episodes. So, I mean, they used it for that. I'm thinking that she recorded so many tapes that she had to store them. So, like, she couldn't keep all of them in the MREP. And for that matter, she's not even using the MREP right now. It's, you know, she's driving something else right now. So it would have to go with somebody else. But that's what I'm thinking. Like, there's so many tapes, she can't carry all of them. And it seems like they found what they needed to find this week, you know, from a tape. But how they found the vault, though, we still have no idea. On to the podcast. Okay, here's a question I've been thinking on this whole gas fields thing. Who's making the gas for this group? Last time I checked, no one knew how to make gas. So are there manuals for the machines still in the plant? I feel you could easily mess up this process. Are they just doing diesel and one grade of gas? Or is there someone saying they need to make 87 and 93 at least because you might get better mileage out of one grade instead of the other? Is there an ethanol versus non-ethanol option? Are they manufacturing kerosene while they're at it? I know that was more than one question, but I couldn't help but ask who is doing this. This is the luckiest group skills-wise and the unluckiest group sticking together-wise. Yeah, I mean, it is worth saying, though, that, you know, like aircraft fuel, you know, helicopter planes, they use a different kind of fuel than than a, you know, semi, which, you know, is probably using diesel. And of course, that's going to be different than regular, you know, gasoline. And I would imagine that they wouldn't, they'd probably just make 93, like do the premium. I don't know, but I know some cars, they tell you not to put premium. They say put 87. So I don't know. And then,
on top of that, diesel, how do you make diesel out of it?
Well, yeah, I don't know how you make diesel, but obviously that's what the semis and, like, not just the semis, but those big trucks usually have a diesel engine, and probably the MREP has a diesel engine, you know, so like they'd obviously have to be making diesel. And I wondered some of that for this week. But anyway, continuing, she says, bring on the tangents, guys. Well, we already have.
But yeah, they have a hidden Eugene somewhere.
Yes. It's okay. We can do whatever the hell we want now when it comes to tangents, because we don't have to answer to the man.
We are the man.
Now, as I alluded
and
to,
woman.
You know, that wasn't the only reason, but creative differences were a big reason why we have split. So, from our old place. So, we want to make the podcast the way we want to make it. And we think that that's how you want to listen to it. So that's what we're doing. And we have the creative freedom to do that now. You can get good stuff from them. Smiley face. I have to say it was nice of Alicia to do the whole Madison nod with the "no one is gone until they're gone" motto on the tree, but also way to rub salt into the forever open wound with that move. Show hashtag team always bring back Madison. All right, let's move on. Mark, you've got the next section.
Yep. The only thing I could come up with for the ending of this episode is they had Wes leave the book just so Alicia could read the last page, as otherwise they wouldn't know he was the painter. It was a roundabout way of setting up her seeing the painter wasn't perfect, and again, she has to find her own balance instead of looking for it in someone else. It's a lot of, quote-unquote, for plot, writing more than writing to the characters and having Alicia never find the painter and come to that realization on her own. She continues on saying, "No to Wes / Alicia. Come on, writers. You're hitting all around it, but Al / Alicia is right there. Get the mark." Smiley face. Sadly, I could see them doing it by having Wes be the good guy again and more like who Alicia could date, because romance, and again, they seem to be doing more plot for plot rather than writing to the characters, but we'll see. He makes a good counter to her ideas, at least so you can do them as frenemies, if nothing else.
That's a good question. I mean, so far, we haven't seen Wes or Alicia, actually.
Exactly. So, or they can make it a challenging romantic where he challenges her thoughts, and that's how they romantically get involved. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. But still good points. All right, well, she continues on. Samora said she was part of the group in her tapes, so we could see her. She was definitely interesting, and I love they're making unique characters like that and exploring how different people deal with situations. And if anybody didn't catch who Samora, she's from the tape. She was from the last tape, right? Of Al's web series.
Yes.
Okay. And we didn't see her yet.
No, we haven't seen her yet. Don't know if we are going to see her.
Yeah. And then she goes on, "I'm sure she would write her off, but as she says, she has a skill that's really helpful when you think about it. So while some could see her as a burden, she's actually a plus for others. Clark was good, and I really like Ed's for some reason. Jodie's was really great near the end for why she didn't say anything until the end, but I kind of feel she and CJ and Earl are dead because all of them couldn't have made it. We'll probably never ever see Ed again, given where he's going, so maybe CJ or Earl made it instead, and we could see them giving people magically meet up in the series currently, but yeah, knowing Samoa is with the team makes me want to see her in a scene interacting with people. And again, this is all in reference to the Al's tapes on the web. She goes on and says, I like Christian and Twilight, but you're not going to top Jennifer Lopez as Selena. A challenge there.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, I actually like Jennifer Lopez. I'm really interested in Christian Serratos.
Yeah. And last, she said, happy birthday, Mark.
No, thank you.
That was it.
All right. So thank you very much, Aaron, for your feedback. And let's move on to this week's episode. So season 5, episode 12, Nair Tamid, written by the showrunners Andrew Chambliss and Ian Goldberg, directed by the director on staff, co-executive producer Michael E. Satrazimus. So I always see this was, I guess, considered a big episode for them to have like these are the people that usually do like the season opener, the season finale. So this trio usually does those kind of episodes together. Not always, but they tend to. The description is, in search of a permanent home for the convoy, Charlie is drawn to a synagogue where she encounters a rabbi surviving on his own. Elsewhere, Sarah and Dwight face unexpected foes. All right, Mark, what did you think of Nair Tamid?
Well, I give it 8 out of 10 D squads. And I didn't really want to go use the word, but and on top of that, it's kind of a slander thing against, you know, what I used to do for a quote unquote geek squad.
Okay. Makes sense. Kyle, what about you?
Yeah, actually, like, I mean, truthfully, I'm like, I was only able because of the holiday to get like one watch of it. So, you know, from my first not being able to get to do like a rewatch, I actually really liked this episode a lot more than I have been. So I actually gave it an 8.2. Shofar a blowin'.
Yeah. And I like this one more than the last few. So, I'm not even going to say it myself. I am going to instead use this. And I'll say it's a 9.
That's not bad.
Seriously? I think Dan the Man might have nicked your taste buds when he was trimming up your face pubes.
So I'll give it 9 face pubes.
Sarah's the best.
That was funny. All right. So we've got some listener ratings. Mark, why don't you start it off?
Well, Steve from Oklahoma City says, 9 out of 10, mean, servant of God. And he says, I should know the reference, and I do remember the reference, if you can.
Is that from
Preacher? I can't
go
off the top of my head.
Is that from?
Yeah, it's pretty much, yeah. And there's a few others because I've heard that before in another movie, and that was like what's torn me.
Well, by the way, Mark, I want to tell you that I have started watching Preacher Season 4.
Oh, cool.
So I did not catch up, but I did. I was able to watch the first couple of episodes. So
of the new season?
Yes.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome.
What a crazy show.
Yeah, we've had fun. It's just me, Steve, laughing.
Yep. So crazy. All right, Kyle, what about you?
All right. Deanna from Detroit, she gives it a 7 out of 10. Charlie wants a new home. Temper tantrums. What the hell? Why would you leave your group?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alex from New Jersey also liked this one. He gives it 9 out of 10. Warm Canisius. I love Canisius, by the way.
I love Canisius, too.
Yeah, they're really good. This show was kind of like me with feedback lately. Back from the dead, so to speak.
And Glynis from Toronto gives it 7 out of 10 rabbis in the house.
And LT from NC gives it 8.5 out of 10 shofar playing rabbis.
All right, so let's move on to Awesome Sauce. Mark, you've got a few from Alex.
Yeah, Alex from New Jersey says, Awesome Sauce of the series is the conversation between Charlie and June. In summary, what are we doing? We have no set place, or something like that. It finally gave Charlie some purpose being a bratty kid. Nice big check. And he says, I thought the ladder sequence was cool and fun. The convoy was set up well for a fight, which was really awesome. The addition of Rabbi Jacob Kasner, quote-unquote Peter Jacobson, I think will be awesome since he is a good actor. And I do agree. I've seen him in a bunch of stuff. He was a great – he's saying he was great in Colony, so I hope they can make him shine.
Yeah, and I hope that doesn't mean it's going to be canceled soon. Well, no, you know, Colony went for 3 seasons, so
yeah.
Colony, I loved that show, but it played on USA, and like USA and Sci-Fi and anything by NBC Universal, they do this crazy thing where they only will allow available 5 episodes, and they, at least that used to be the case, they'd only allow you to stream the last 5. And like the
and do whole seasons,
right? And even if you had it on Hulu, and they wouldn't let you play on certain, you know, certain like you could watch it on a web in a web browser, but you couldn't watch it on your TV and crazy stuff like that. So with Colony, I fell behind in season 1 and it lapped. So I missed I couldn't get the missing episodes that I missed, right? So I ended up I think I stopped after episode 6, even though I really liked that show. And it's one of those shows that I've been meaning to get back to and just never have. I know, you know, some people we know love that show.
Yeah.
So, all right, next.
All right, next is Steve from Oklahoma City. It's Charlie hitting the Zed with the door and the rabbi finishing it off. Great tag team kill.
Dieta from Detroit says, the way the convoy sets up its perimeter with fences and cars now. Now that's apocalypse thinking. Yes, it is.
Yeah, agree.
And Glynis from Toronto says, John and June trying to get to the SWAT truck in warped game of walkers and ladders. Apocalypse version of Lager, South African term for a defensive circle of wagons down in the Boer War, but probably mimicking and referring to the Westerns where they always show Indians attacking the settlers who've put the wagons in a circle, which I'll talk about later.
Hmm.
She also says, I love Sarah's habit of applying nicknames. Now for Dwight equal babyface and SWAT truck equal swatty.
Yep.
Yep. She's the best.
All right, Mark, we have you next on the list for your own awesome sauce.
Well, like Glynis mentioned before, I like the whole old Western approach about keeping a circle with your caravan. Having all your wagons facing the enemy in a circle. That was always a basic defensive thing for all those colonies at that time. That was a Western thing with the American Indians when they would attack settlers back in the day. But that was the way the settlers were able to salvage and save themselves from an onslaught or an attack. And, yeah, it was a definite good history trait that they brought in. I just enjoyed that so much. The next part would be, the use of the Shi'ar to distract the walkers. That was something of a trope in movies, but it just reminded me, and yes, it was also used in the movie The Knights of Bad-Astum to call everyone to the LARP for battle, which is pretty funny too, because I highly recommend that movie if you're into fantasy, role play, and all that stuff. But it was used well within this episode, and I really enjoyed it, and the fact that you got to see a lot of, even with the rabbi and what he uses, he's consistently using all the Jewish words and every format, even with Charlie, even with you know, John, you know, and on top of that, you know, it's, you know, giving John the yarmulke, and then yeah. John just puts the hat on top.
Yeah, I love that too.
I got a good kick out of that one.
Yeah,
he was like,
yeah, and the look on his face when he put the hat on too was like priceless. The next part would be the reverse Father Gabriel. Father Gabriel stayed within the church and outcasted the flock, but with the rabbi, he sought faith on his own or to look because he lost his faith, but to come back and to basically continue because, well, that is what happens when you're used to doing things normally, whether in faith or life. It was a consistent thing he just did, just out of habit. Kind of like the dead in the movie Dawn of the Dead. You know, people kept, you know, those dead just kept going back to the mall. But in this case, it was a conscious effort or a thought within the rabbi to constantly be doing this. So. And then the last part would be the Sarah and Dwight getting along. You know, her calling him babyface. Come on. I would love to ship those together. You know, it's regardless of Dwighty Boy's wife that we have not seen yet or heard from since, I don't know, what, the mid-season or from the last time we got a letter from her. I'm hoping he leaves that wife behind thinking of her as like a memory because he's probably already felt that she's been gone. And see something within Sarah. Because I felt something there. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's another 80s song.
Oh, Sarah.
Yeah, but that's not by Journey or Steve Perry. I think that's
Yeah, it's Sarah Starship. By Jefferson Starship. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we're
I couldn't resist. I don't know. Still, I want to see... I still want to see, you know, him find his wife because okay.
Yeah, get that in there.
Yes, have to do it.
And if they ship those two, we need to get the Sarah clip.
Yes.
Yeah. I just wanted to add, like, I thought the whole, like, just introducing just kind of another faith besides just what, you know, your typical, and I don't know if it's typical, but you know, you always get some kind of a Christian faith in these kind of TV shows. But to just have like this whole Jewish centered, like, cause you know, it's like, I don't know. It's like, I thought it was really awesome because of just him speaking Hebrew to Charlie, you know, just coming, you know, being like, oh no, it's time for, you know, this. And I, you know, I'm like, my husband's Jewish. And so I'm now, you know, I grew up Mormon. So it's kind of like I've been exposed to his family and that side of it. And it's like, there is this really family or like just a people connection. Just within the Jewish faith. So it was really awesome to see this play out.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. And very, very warm and inviting, that my, you know, Jewish friends that I know that, you know, when I've, like met, some friends at conferences. They like bring you into their hotel room, and they got food, and they got, you know, all this stuff. And it's like a whole community thing. And anyway, so I think I really liked it as well. And in fact, several of my awesome sauces had to do with that. So like you'd mentioned it a little bit yourself, Mark, but like the using the tradition and the ritual, you know, the hymn or chant or whatever you would call that at the beginning. I thought that was cool. I love how he's, you know, he may have lost his faith, but he's still using it to keep himself sane. Like the use of routine, I think, can provide you with structure, especially at times when there isn't any. So I think that was really good. But just how they did this, it's been a long time. Like the only faiths that we've seen on The Walking Dead in either show have been either Christian, or we have now seen a little bit of you know, Muslim in on TWD in the case of Sadiq and what's her name?
Jerry's wife.
Jerry's wife, yes.
Yeah.
Can't think of her name. I will look it up in a minute. But yeah, but we've not met any like of the Jewish religion. Never met any Mormons either, for that matter, Kyle.
they're all hiding in the mountain somewhere.
Utah. But, curious, but anyway, it'd be interesting to see more, though.
Yeah. So I like how it was done. I thought it was very, it really added a flavor that we've not seen before. Yeah. But just great. And like just the subtle touches, like you mentioned the putting on the yarmulke. I got a kick out of the fact that John hands him that candy, which I was thinking was going to be a blackjack, but it wasn't. It was a caramel.
No.
And first thing he does is looks at it to see, does it have the kosher mark on it? And it did. So I thought that was great too. And he's just like, oh, you know, had to check. And
My ex-girlfriend's parents used to do that at our old family business, and we used to have knish, and they were so happy that we would get it from a really good family in Brooklyn, New York, and it was Gabilla knish.
Yeah.
And they enjoyed that, and we always loved it. And I think I had like two a day or something at one point.
I believe it. They're so good.
You still get them. Yeah. They're frozen. They'll ship them to you.
We used to get them. We had a deli that was by where I used to live in Cleveland, and we would get them occasionally. Really, really good. Anyway, just moving on. I liked the cold open. And you know, we talked about that whole thing, but I liked how it kind of brought in the Jewish faith and all that stuff. And you know, you kind of could have started the episode thinking, are we watching Fear the Walking Dead? And it's only when, you know, the walker starts to bang on the door, do we kind of, oh yeah, okay, so this is zombie. So, and Kyle, you mentioned the pulverizing of that walker. I love that too.
Yeah.
I also really enjoyed the interactions between Sarah and Dwight. And, you know, I already played the one clip, but it was so good that I'm going to play it again.
That's not bad.
Seriously? I think Dan the Man might have nicked your taste buds when he was trimming up your face pubes.
And I had to bring that up again because I think Sarah has proven herself to definitely be this show's Abraham.
Sarah Rabinowitz.
Yes.
And we find out that she is Jewish too.
Yeah, which I thought was interesting. We also have the clip with right after that where Dwight and Sarah, you know, especially Dwight is talking about like what it was like being on the road. And I do have a comment that I'm going to make later in the week sauce about this clip, but I really like this one. It's a little over a minute, but I'm going to still share it.
Here's to the road.
I can't remember anything but.
I hear that. Wen and I have been pounding the pavement since before Munchers started munching.
At least you had each other.
How long you been hoofing it solo?
I don't know. I just sort of lost track of time.
I think I'd have gone off the deep end. That long? Nobody to talk to?
Yeah, almost did.
Your gal kept you going? The idea of her?
Yeah. And the walkers, too. Yeah, I remember just watching them, you know, when I was sleeping in cars or whatever. Just sort of wandering around. You know, who knows how far they came from or where they're going. They're just wandering, you know. It was a life on the road forever.
I say to hell with that.
Yeah, I did.
I wanted to bring this one up because I liked something that has never really been mentioned on this show or the other show. And that is something that I think about a lot. I would say this pops into my head at least once a week. When I'm driving to work, I will think about all the people that I pass by on the road. And I wonder, like, where are they going? What are they doing? How far are they going? And just wondering how our lives intersected at that moment to put us, you know, say at the same intersection at the same time. I always think about that. And of course, that's something, unless you were part of some study or something, you'd never know. But I find that fascinating because that's a similar thought that I've thought on this show and on The Walking Dead, wondering like, well, when did this guy die? You know, how did he die? Where did he die? Like, was he from there? Or like, you know, like what brought him to this point where he's, you know, at the synagogue or whatever, being killed by the rabbi? Like, what was he part of the congregation? Was he somewhere else? Like, these are things I think about. And yeah. I thought it was really interesting to finally get that kind of question brought up in the show. So I thought that was really good.
Yeah, very much like the hitchhiker that Rick, Michonne, and Carl pass, and they just leave stranded in the dust, and then they come back and they steal his knapsack or of goodies in that Walking Dead episode.
Yeah. Like, we've only ever seen this explored once, and I think that was in the second episode of Guts of The Walking Dead, where when, you know, they're about to wear the guts of this guy to for Glenn and Rick to kind of get through, you know, this horde. You know, they
Rick picks out the wallet and says the person's name and tells them how much money he had in his wallet.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, his name, his age, and you know, where he was from and all that stuff. And anyway, I think that kind of stuff is fascinating. So I love that they brought this up. So anyway, it's really cool. All right. So for that, you know, that's why I rated the episode as high as I did, because to me, this is where the writers and the showrunners really excel, are on those like small character moments. They seem to really nail that stuff. But it's the larger story that they could use some help on, I think. All right.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the week variety.
You're worthless and weak.
All right, Mark, you're up.
Well, Steve from Oklahoma says, John and June taking the SWAT vehicle to get Charlie. The whole point was that it was supposed to be used to protect the convoy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No. Yeah. Can't disagree there.
Yeah, exactly.
The only reason to take the MREP was for the plot. That there was no other reason to take it. And I had this in my weak sauce, Steve. I have to 100% agree with this. It was weak and it made no sense. All they had to do was just take another truck. You know,
why did it have to be John and June? Like, it could have.
Very true. Well, I mean, they talked to her, but your point being, like, they had 36 of them. So, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, any of those, what is it that Rabbi Jacob says about the 36?
There's 36, righteous
people? Righteous people, yeah. So
yeah, and he's already met three.
So yeah, so there's another 33 righteous people in the convoy. They could have taken any of those.
But if he joins, then it's 37. It breaks that whole 36 righteous. And
yeah.
All right, bye, Charlie.
I agree. I'm sorry.
Yep. All right, Kyle.
Our next listeners, our next weak sauce comes from Dieta from Detroit. How do you not know Charlie is missing? What the hell? Do they have that many people in the convoy? If anybody should have noticed, it should have been John and June. Like, who was she riding with? Wouldn't they have noticed? And then she gives two, I guess, shrug emojis. The whole car roof jumping John and June did with that ladder only to get stuck on the car roof while Brat Charlie and the rabbi watch them struggle. Then when June says to Charlie, you know what we have to do. And then the rabbi decides to go into the synagogue to make noise by blowing the horn, attracting all the walkers. So why didn't he just do that in the first place? I think he didn't want to. I don't think he was looking at like using, I think he wanted to just keep the church, you know, like he wanted to stay there. And I think at least that's kind of why, he didn't do it the first place. They had a plan. He let them do their plan, but then when it failed, and I think, just him talking to Charlie, and when Charlie made her whole, like, oh, we can stay here. Like, well, let's just build a home, blah, 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 here. I think that he started to face some of the stuff that he's been dealing with, probably, you know, just kind of like his outlook and, like, you know, the stuff that he has did, because, you know, we find out at that point, you know, what he did to his congregation. You know, he didn't just leave to go get supplies. So, I mean, I think that's why he didn't do it the first time. But the other thing I thought was the whole ladder thing, too. Watching it, I thought it was like, oh, okay, cool. They're like being resourceful or like, you know, thinking outside the box. But I just felt like it was so much, it was kind of just like a waste of time. Like, there was like shots from above that were showing them. And you literally saw them cross over to the next car, and there were like no walkers off to their right. You know, I mean, obviously we can't see like, their vantage point because they're showing us from above, but it just really looked like they could just jumped off the car and then just like, you know, start running to the MRAP. And they had guns, which they were using, and they could have shot any walkers that were in their way. So, so I kind of just started looking. I'm like, really? Like, it seems so, or it just seemed like, okay, they wanted to do something cool, and so they just did this.
Yeah, I have more to say about this in a couple minutes, because I came up with another point on this one. But Alex from New Jersey is next. He says, I'm sick of the group being so separated. The oil fields? The convoy? Can they just go to the mall and set up camp? That has come up in a lot of people talking about this. I've heard that on a few other podcasts too. It's like, the mall. What about the mall? Mm-hmm. I think he even mentions this again, maybe. But I'm also done with the let's be Mr. Nice Guy all the time. You knew hole would come back and bite Dwight in the buttocks. Those are words that I've changed. So let me understand this. The most prized thing they have is the oil field. And they are guarding it with a man in a wheelchair and a bunch of kids and Luciana, we think. But not sure since no one can figure out what to do with her character.
And we haven't seen her in a while.
Yeah.
Yes. Spoiler, I believe we are going to see her this coming week.
Yeah. good point, though.
It is a good point. And I think some of that is, some of it makes sense in a way because it allows for, you know, like if they supposedly, you know, the Logan's, you know, bad guys are bad guys without any teeth because they don't seem to want to, you know, kill, even though they've got all this firepower. But, I think the idea, though, is that with them splitting up, they are, like, for example, if they were all at the refinery, then that would make the refinery vulnerable. If they were all in the convoy, that would also make the refinery vulnerable because it wouldn't be anyone there to defend it. And but Alex makes a good point, is exactly who they have there defending it. Mm-hmm. But then again, we don't know who Polar Bear's people are at the refinery because they've obviously been there before our group kind of got involved. So, I mean, who knows? But the whole point about Luciana, yes, no one can argue about that little point. All right, Mark, you've got another weak sauce from. Glennis, it looks like.
Yeah. Glennis from Toronto says, Charlie broke radio silence first before Sarah did. John June commented on Sarah breaking radio silence, but not Charlie. And probably as a result of Charlie. So Logan heard that the SWAT truck was going to be separated from the convoy / caravan.
Yeah, but along that, you know, about radio silence, I mean, it's not just radio silence, but like not talking in code. I mean, don't they know Regulation 46A of Starfleet?
Regulation 46A. If transmissions are being monitored during battle,
no uncoded messages on an open channel.
Does anybody know what that's from? The Wrath of Khan. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I should have recognized her.
Yeah, because that was Kirstie Alley at the end.
Yeah.
But yes, they should be not talking straight up. They should be talking in code. At least, you know, something that would take them a little bit of time to figure out what they're saying.
Like Salazar did.
Yeah.
Daniel would use songs.
Yeah.
That works best.
You had one more point from Glennis.
Yeah, she continues on saying, it's weird that Sarah and Dwight and company don't shoot Logan's men. Same occurred in the previous episode when Morgan and Al were roadblocked by Logan and his thugs. Logan didn't just kill them off. Maybe the group is just trying to save bullets.
Well, I don't know. I think they're not willing to shoot unless shot upon. I think that's what it comes from. You know, otherwise, you know, how are they actually helping people if they're shooting them? Right.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly. I think that's the idea. Mark, you have a weak sauce?
Yeah. So don't shoot me for saying this, but why in the blue hell would Charlie leave? Unless she still feels that Alicia and Strand are pissed at Nick being killed by her, and she still feels guilty. I'm not sure. This is just a story to give her a spotlight so that they have something for her, in my opinion, in some way, you know, like just give her like some sort of shining moment, maybe. Oh, yeah. Carl connected with Father Gabriel, so let's have a Charlie connect with a rabbi. Yeesh.
I don't know why Charlie would leave. And for that matter, why did she get so dirty? So one thing, when I first watched this and I watched that part of it on the first time on my phone, I wasn't sure that that was Charlie until she said her name, because she was like, her face was so grimy and dirty. I'm thinking like, well, how did she get so dirty? But maybe it was just the moonlight, like making that more, yeah. But to that, you asked, why would she leave? Well, I asked, how did she get there? Because that's not really well explained. Like, how did she leave exactly? Like, how did they not find her to leave? Like, if they did a head count before, what part of the journey was she able to leave, like, for her not to be detected? That I didn't understand. But my biggest weak sauce had to do with also part of my awesome sauce, but Dwight being unaware of how much time had passed getting from Virginia to Texas. Yet again, them being vague about how much time has passed. And I was going to put this in the news section. I saw a post from somebody on Reddit that had like done a timeline again. And I don't know if they were basing that on the one that's on the Walking Dead wiki or if it was something else. But again, I just saw this. I'm like, ugh. Because, of course, they bring up the whole thing about Rick waking up from a coma 59 days in the apocalypse. And it drives me nuts. But because that's impossible. You know, I watched my father die after the fourth day of not being able to drink. And he, you know, he had pneumonia when he passed away. And, that in the case of Rick, his, you know, fluid bags, you know, that were sustaining him, they had run out. There's no way that he could have like woke up, you know, like 30 days after being, getting any medical attention, just waking up. Cause he would have ran out of fluids. He would have died from, thirst.
Yeah, dehydration.
Yeah, it drives me nuts. Yeah. So the whole timeline again.
Yeah, it's so disturbing because it's like even if he was able to breathe on his own in a slight coma and his body fed off his fat, but dehydration is the most important thing too.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that's, you have to suspend your disbelief, I guess.
You have to, but it's just too far
fetched. Yeah. It's like what they say. You have to have it within like 3 to 4 days or something like that.
Yeah. And I think like if you're in good health, I think you can go longer, but, still like there's no way a shooting.
Unless there's something that we never knew about and he was being taken care of that crazy nurse in that stupid webisode, and she was still in the hospital.
Yeah, was that torn apart, or was that?
I can't remember the names. I have the webisodes. I downloaded them years ago, but you can't find them anymore. They're hard to come by.
Yeah, it was. I think the third series of webisodes that had that, but it wasn't. It wasn't like definitively said there whether that was true or not. And for that matter, not to use a Star Trek reference, but we don't know if that's canon or not.
Exactly.
So
yeah, well, according to some people, it is kind of like the Red Machete and everything.
I assume it is canon. And
the Bicycle Girl one too. They actually had one about her.
Right.
Yeah, we're going off tangent based on original Walking Dead. Sorry, people.
Yeah. Okay, so we are done with our weak sauce, so let's move on to what sauce.
What?
And strangely enough, we don't have any what sauce from anybody this week. So we are going to go to our own. So, Mark, what do you have?
Well, I guess they got slapped in the head by the rabbi because he pointed out that they shouldn't just be nomads and just settle and fight for what they need. Honestly, they had the mall at some point, and Logan with his crew didn't find that. Come on. Settle down already.
Yeah.
Even the rabbi says it.
Yeah. My what sauce comes down to just basically it was like, I don't know, was I missing something? And we kind of mentioned this earlier, but it's like, are we missing something with the tanker? Like, it's filled with unleaded gas, and they even say that, like, so they confirm that. But aren't the semis run on diesel? Yeah, and not unleaded. Yeah. And I mean, Sarah even says, is like, oh yeah, I'm running out of gas, but I'm not like hooked up to the tank. So so it was just kind of like, again, we haven't been, you know, shown at this refinery or whatever, you know, tank town, like if they are producing multiple, you know, or, you know, different things, you know, unleaded and diesel, because you would think that every semi that they probably have or are using, you know, even in the beginning when Clayton's people were like leaving the boxes out, like those had to be running diesel.
Yeah, you would certainly. You would certainly think that. And, you know, I would say to that showrunners, you could have adequately explained that.
And you blew it! You blew it! You blew it!
You blew it! You had it all and you blew it!
Because your point is well taken, that if the tanker has unleaded and they are, in fact, it looked like all of Logan's people that follow them, because they had two big trucks and a big SUV. So it's likely that all three of them were also driving diesel. Mm-hmm. So all you'd have to say is that's unleaded. This is diesel. You know, that's all you need to say. But instead, they made it stupid.
or dumb it down for us, and when they come down to Tank Town, have somebody explain how they're able to change certain gases in a certain way. Because unleaded, I think, has ethanol in it, whereas diesel does not.
Mm.
I don't know. I'm not, you know, a gas guru or any in some respect, but maybe they have some way. Maybe, you know, kind of like, maybe this is going back to King Kong in the 70s when they found all the gas or whatever it was, and they realized it's like, no, it's going to take about 100 years for this to actually turn into gas.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and there's like, you know, there's biodiesel, you know, I mean, there's, that's the thing, but it does feel like they just dumbed it down to be like, oh, unleaded, because that's just, everybody knows gas.
And yeah.
So it works in everything.
And that would kill a diesel engine, too, if they put unleaded gas
in. Oh, no. Putting diesel in an unleaded engine.
Yeah.
It definitely destroys it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Not any better than putting, like, water in the gas tank, or sugar, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or
yeah,
a banana in a tailpipe. Yeah.
There you go.
Yo, just give us some answers, please. Writers and showrunners.
They seem to do that in this show so far. Like, we'd be asking these same kind of questions, and then like, oh, the next episode, oh, there it is. Yeah. You know, like, now they explained it. You know, the roads were impassable or blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You know, it was like, we had to fly over the mountain instead of drive.
Yeah. Oops, we didn't say that. Oh, we should say that now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I had a few here. The one point, speaking of the unleaded versus diesel, they're driving these big trucks and a big SUV, not subcompacts. So what was up with that? Because when we saw Logan's group before, they were all driving these little puddle jumpers. you know? So that also fits to that. So, like, you know, if they had been, they would have been able to use unleaded. So that would have been, that would have made more sense. But it was, I'm not sure which one to do first here, but I guess I'm going to do my second one first. Because I kind of thought of my first point first. So it's, but because this could have just easily been weak sauce, but I kind of mentioned this in my earlier. The whole conversation between Charlie and the rabbi, when he admitted the fact that he, you know, he had left the congregation and that's how they got, you know, somehow they died while he was away. That whole conversation was happening while John and June were stranded out there. So, like, they're having this several-minute conversation in the middle instead of helping them. And, I didn't pick up on this right away, but the last watch I did today, I'm hearing them, you know, go through the scene, and the scene was good, except for the fact that I'm hearing John and June shooting, you know? So this whole thing's going on, this whole conversation about admitting, you know, how he actually ended up alone is going on instead of them helping John and June. I thought that was really bad. So it was one of those things that's like, well, do I put this in the weak sauce or I put this in the what sauce? I don't know. So I decided to put it in the what sauce. I also thought it was a bit of an abrupt turn to say all these things about Charlie being led there by God and that God would give her a reason for being there, and then to say he doesn't believe in God. It just made a good part of the story that up until that point was really working not gel together for me as well as it could have. It seemed like it was a good character point, but not good from the whole episode as a whole, because it made the plot kind of do like a little bit of a, as you would expect.
What?
Because it's like, huh? Like, why did he say all these things if he didn't believe in God anymore? You know? So I just kind of did a little bit of a, huh? When that happened. All right. So we only have one sad sauce, and it's for me.
Aww.
And I thought it was a little bit sad of Sarah setting down that home sweet home rug in the middle of the field before getting out of that truck, because it just reminds you of the fact that right now they don't have a home. So I thought that was a good point to make. Okay, so let's move on to our voicemail.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
Well, we got three voicemails this week. What do you know? From two people. So our first voicemail is from our good friend Steve from Oklahoma.
Hello, Walking Dead Talker. This is Steve. And just a few notes for Nerd to Mead. I really like the episode. And I've been consistently giving these ratings of nines, I think. You know, I had that one really low one, I think, like the 8.5, 8.5 or 8. And Mark, I really hope that you got the From Dusk Till Dawn reference in my rating. So hope you were the one that read it and you read it correctly with the right cadence from Harvey Keitel's character in From Dusk Till Dawn. And it's interesting what Charlie was looking for. She was trying to find a permanent home. And then, of course, I don't know if it's a paradox there or if it's a parallel between the fact that they had to abandon all their tents when they left so quickly when Logan's people showed up. So she went looking for a permanent home and they lost some of their temporary homes. And it also seemed like from her talks with the rabbi that Charlie wasn't just looking for a place to live. She wanted a reason to live, and keeping that lamp lit would have given them a reason to live. I thought that was kind of interesting. And, that giving the place up there at the end, that she recognizes, obviously there's been some conversations between her and June about their various pasts. And we know that June was at some big, collective that had to be abandoned because, you know, her daughter infected people. And of course, Charlie was in the convoy of whatever they called those guys in last season. So that was interesting. And then, do you think that the location of the oil field is kind of Logan's, it's kind of his ticket to get into this other group that we don't know about yet with the helicopter and stuff? And just a few thoughts. Can't wait to hear what you guys thought. Talk to you later.
Darn! I missed the whole Keitel thing. It went over my head. One of my favorite movies. And oh, Steve, I'm so sorry. He knows me so well too, and it just went over my head.
And I led you down the garden path by thinking it was Preacher. And you know, I listened to your voicemail, Steve, but I guess my notes weren't good enough this week, because I definitely, when it comes to listening to your voicemail.
And you blew it! You blew it!
I won't play the whole thing, but yeah. So anyway, before I forget, thank you so much, Steve, for your voicemail. As usual, you are the man. All right. I had a couple of things wanted to say about that. Them leaving all the stuff behind. I had that on my weak sauce or my sad sauce as well. I have to agree with you on that. I thought that was also kind of sad, because there was this one. It wasn't that that much of a long shot, but it was long enough that you saw them. You know, they left behind like a lot of tents and even some other things, and you know, maybe they'll go back and get them, but it was kind of sad that they left that behind.
Maybe they're just regular nomads and they just leave things as they go.
Yeah,
and they get them as they go, you know. No, that's how they've been living. Yeah, lately,
right? I think they're good at setting up camp.
Yeah,
maybe they're not so good at taking it down.
Destroying it down and leaving evidence.
They were in a hurry to leave, right, obviously, right. So it's understandable, but I got 3 points down, but I'm going to go to the third one. Both Charlie and June referenced the convoy, and I think you got this kind of wrong, Steve. Yes, June had that, thing at that FEMA office or whatever it was that we see them go back to in season 4. But I don't think that's what they were referencing. I think they were referencing the vultures. And because if you recall, June, after the stadium broke down, she became a part of the vultures. And we didn't really see her, you know, until she showed up on that one episode at the end. But, you know, she was part of the vultures for a time. Not as long as Charlie was, but right. She was part of that you know, group. And I liked the idea of that you brought up about a place to call home versus a reason to live. And yeah, that was something that Charlie mentioned about, like, you know, keeping the flame lit. It reminded me of Lost a little bit. You know.
Yeah.
That, you know, what was it they had to do in Lost to keep the thing going? Do you remember? Do either of you guys remember that?
No, I remember the episode, yeah. But not in thorough detail.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, but I like the idea of that, you know, that you brought up about place versus reason, because yes. A place to call home was definitely a thing, but she was talking also about, like, you know, what's the point of all this? So good point there. All right, so let's move on to the next voicemail. This is the first one we got from LT from NC.
Hey, guys, this is LT from NC. I'm leaving you voicemail this week because I've got a meeting after work and I'm trying to get out of here, so I've got to hustle. So, given this episode 8.5 out of 10, and the best I could do is shofar playing rabbis. Liked the episode, but my complaints this week are time and distance. So Charlie bailed out of the convoy. Nobody noticed she was gone. They went back to get her at the synagogue, and then they did the whole, the bad guys show up and they bug out. And so they were trying to get the SWAT bus as far away from the oil fields as possible. I need a freaking map. I mean, it's just this whole thing of, are they that far apart? Are they that close? There's just time and distance issues here. Got to go with the headcount thing. You know, whose job is it to watch Charlie? And why didn't they notice she was gone? Sort of saw the ladder trick with June and John coming. Did expect it to be the get all the way to the fence and get stranded on top of the car. The parallels between the rabbi and Father Gabriel. Gabriel locked himself in the church so that his parishioners were outside and turned. But the rabbi seemed to put everybody in the fellowship hall and lock them down once they did turn. So it's not quite the same, but it's a different variation. Yeah, the whole deal with Dwight letting the guy go and him showing back up, we kind of knew it was coming. I guess we're going to find out why everybody is on horseback next week or this coming week. The whole deal with Logan, it just makes me wonder if what was on the tapes that he figured out. So that'll be interesting to see. I don't know. I mean, overall, it was a good episode. But again, I just have those little bothersome questions that just keep nagging at me. Enjoyed the conversation with, you know, with Dwight on the top of the truck with binoculars. I enjoyed the fact that they...
For some reason, that one just cut off. So, yeah. But he's got a second one. So anyway, just before I play that second one, I thought I would just chime in to say, indeed, time and distance. Kyle, you have your gas and batteries issues. For me, it's time and distance. I have brought that up over and over again. Particularly,
they should have covered more ground by this time.
Yeah. But the point being that it wasn't very well explained about Charlie. I agree with you, LT. Because it like, how did she leave? When did she leave? Like, if they, right. Like, did they do a head count and she just like escaped? And, you know, like, who was she with? Like, how come they didn't report her being missing? There's so many things that if you know, we said this before on this show, if you put this show to a microscope, there are just things about it that are going to, you know, fall apart. Like I loved it a lot more than you guys did. The first episode coming back, Channel 4, you know, I loved that, that found footage perspective. But again, if you went over it, you know, and really, really analyze it, the whole thing would fall apart. And it's again, this particular episode, especially that point, it definitely had that. The other point I wanted to make is the Gabriel versus Rabbi thing. I definitely, you know, had some points. I actually had that in my notes. Like, Gabriel's story to me was much worse. Like, he locked out his congregation. They had tried to come to him, and he just, you know, he didn't open the doors. Mm-hmm. And basically, when they came to him for help at a time when they needed him the most, he was not there for them. And in a most horrible, awful, like, you know, life-changing
like
way.
He left them out there while the walkers came and swarmed them and killed them.
Exactly.
And he saved himself.
So to me, what happened with Gabriel was so much worse. And to me, Rabbi Jacob Kestner here is much more sympathetic to me. Like, it didn't ring true to me when he said that he left to go for supplies, because my first thought was, why did you go alone? So I'm glad that they did deal with this. But and it was very similar. It was definitely similar. But I definitely thought that, like, because I went back and listened to this within the last couple of weeks so I think it was when I was working on the website trying to fix a few things. I went back and I listened to one of my what I consider a classic for this podcast is when we've only ever done this once. We did a supplemental episode of season 5, episode 14 of Walking Dead, which is titled Spin. And if you don't remember which episode that was the episode where Noah and what was his name? The Deanna son, not Spencer, but Ethan or Aiden? Aiden, I think it was.
Aiden.
Yeah. When they both died. And that one, if you recall, Gabriel at the end of the episode, like, basically told Deanna that these people were bad. And that got Ruthie and I so worked up that we did a whole 35-minute rant mini episode where we called him, like, you know, like, it was like, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you. It was basically the extent of the episode. So if you're ever, you know, curious, I would go back and listen to that. It's a very early episode of us from, like, you know, 4+ years ago. That's still entertaining. But definitely when you consider that character and how Gabriel was just so hated by practically everyone, this Rabbi Jacob to me is nowhere near the same. And I don't think that he actually locked the congregation in. I think what happened was he found them in that hall and he just, you know, locked them in somehow. So, or they may already been locked in. I don't know, but I don't think he put them there. I think they were already there. That's what I understood.
That's what I understood too.
Same here.
He didn't cause them to die, but him taking off or whatever, you know, and coming back or whatever, he found them like that and then just basically secured them.
Right. I mean, maybe indirectly, because maybe the loss of, like, his leadership maybe threw them in disarray or something. So maybe indirectly it didn't help, but it's much different for something like that versus what Gabriel, who was directly responsible for the deaths of his congregation, directly. And really, you know, there is no excuse for Gabriel. Gabriel will have to atone for those sins for the rest of his life and death, and probably burn in fiery hell because of that. So, or at least, you know, spend 10,000 years in purgatory. So, anyway, my point being is that Rabbi definitely more sympathetic than Gabriel. All right, so we, as I mentioned before, we got a second piece of voicemail from LT. So let's move on with that.
Hey guys, LT from NC again. Just wanted to throw something out from last week about something Mark had said about the beanbag rounds and knives in the head. So what is it with that? Your skull is the thickest bone in your body. It's designed that way to protect all those little meaty bits inside that are pretty important for us to keep living. And I understand in the context of the show, but yeah, you're not going to just go stick a knife in somebody's forehead like you would cutting a head of lettuce. You know, it's not going to happen. And it just seems to be one of the little tropey things they do. You just are not going to shank somebody in the head. Now, as far as the beanbag rounds go, I didn't write it because I was kind of in a hurry. You know, I've seen beanbags in the real world. You know, they will, they're not, quote unquote, not lethal, but it's not lethal as you can get and shoot somebody with a shotgun because it spreads out to about an inch and a half in diameter, just like you saw on the show. And if you shoot somebody in the head, you're still going to fracture their skull. I mean, it's still going to do some damage. I mean, I thought it was kind of funky that they played with that. But, you know, Mark was on the money when he was, you know, talking about the relative damage of projectiles and things like that. And I just wanted to throw that back out there because I thought you guys handled it fairly well. And, you know, one of these days I'm going to shoot you a video and send it to you about some shooty type things. All right. Looking forward to this week.
Well, that would be something I'd want to see. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Same here. I'd like to see that.
Do it, LT. Yes. Send it.
Maybe we should have you on for a supplemental shooting in the apocalypse episode or something. But
yeah, he and my brother would get along because my brother was in law enforcement and he knows, and he and I both know because he even stated it a long time ago when we were watching The Walking Dead together. And it was the one episode where Lizzie and Mika's father has to be dispatched by Carol and the knife just slides in just like butter.
Yeah.
And my brother says it, he goes, that's not real. It's like, you can't just even go through the ear and go right into a brain that right. easily. And, you know, I think they put us in this thought of the heads are very squishable on the Zeds. And that's why I stated that, you know, with the beanbag, it should have just gone through it because of the velocity of the beanbag and how it is almost not like a bullet, but it should just squish it based upon age and how it deteriorated and how these are squishable at this point.
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, and I think that that one walker that we see, I think that's exactly what happened to them. You know, that their head, you know, basically, you know, there was a fractured skull and whatever, there was enough brain damage to take them down, but it wasn't as lethal as, you know, a bullet would have been, but. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny when you brought this point up, LT. And before I forget, because I didn't forget, do it yet. Anyway, thank you so much, LT, for your two voicemails this week. It reminded me of something I should have put in my awesome sauce, and that was the one scene that we see. I think it was John Dory. Shot the walker, and we see the shot from the back of the walker's head, and it's split apart. And I thought that was rather cool. So,
yeah, definitely. I think you see them through the hole at some point.
Yeah,
too. Yeah,
yeah. That was a cool bit of a
visual. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so anyway, that second voicemail, we could have even put this at the start of. With Aaron's feedback, but I didn't even realize it. So but anyway, thank you so much, LT, for your voicemail. And I do mean when I said we had LT was on our last roundtable on the Star Trek Discovery podcast. And I also tell you, I never got a chance to tell you, LT, I heard you on the last patron roundtable on Trek FM talking about the Klingons. And man, I don't know what it was that week. But you were on. You killed it. Awesome. He killed it. He was awesome. So funny on that episode. So, yeah. So anyway, yeah, we'd love to have him on at some point. All right. Let's move on. So Kyle, you are sorry. No. Boop. Yeah, I know. All right. So let's move on. And Mark, you have some feedback from Alex.
Yep. Our friend Alex from New Jersey says, by the way, what's with Charlie and the older men? I guess she has some sort of father issues, or in this case, rabbi issues. I do like the induction of the rabbi, or as I like to call him, Jewish Gabriel, since they stole the storyline from him. Which is pretty much the opposite, I think, as Alex. I was going to say Steve.
Yeah, we were talking
same about this. Same storyline, just different.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I look at it as like the, what George Carlin used to say is the chain link fence vision. You know, you look at the chain link fence with both eyes, it's really close, but you close one eye, it's really far away. So, yeah, they're pretty much the opposite, but the same.
Like a mirror? And
that's what I like. Pretty much. They're pretty much mirror copies of each other in some respect. It's the mirror, maybe an alternate universe of these two different type of religious mentors and how they are able to go through the zombie apocalypse.
Do you think that the rabbi is from the Terran mirror universe? <laughs> You know. If you don't get that, listeners, tune into the Star Trek Discovery podcast, season one.
I got that reference too, and I watched the whole season.
All right. Anyway, moving on, you've got one other point.
Yeah, he continues on saying, I really do think they have the ingredients for a great show, but the storyline is just not done well at all. They are doing a great job of sinking this tanker / ship. Help me, Obi-Wan. You're our only hope. Or for Brian, make it so. Sorry, I had to channel my Patrick Stewart.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know. Makes me think of another reference from that, and that is Admiral Satie saying to Picard, I've taken down bigger men than you, Picard. One of my favorite episodes, by the way, the drumhead. I've said it before. I've even said it before on this podcast. The showrunners handle character moments better than story, and I mean, we can go back from into season four and just look at the examples of yet again. It's like they, and you could even argue that maybe this is true with Gimple too. So they just, there's too many gaps, and I don't know if they're just trying to play the show a little more like Z Nation or something, like making, playing more on the humor and not making it so serious all the time. I don't know if that's what it is, but like the suspension of disbelief, as Jason and Karen on the Walking Dead cast call it. Actually, they call it the department of the suspension of disbelief, technically. Anyway, using that kind of term, there, it seems like on this show, even more than on the main show, there are just so many things where, you know, like it just.
I already said it, and I mentioned that beer balloons. Come on, that was the one thing. I'm like, are we going Z Nation route with this? Cool off, and they've cooled off on some of the gags at least, but it still has that humor in it, and I. Thinking this is a way to cleanse our palate from the original show. So that way we have something that is similar and they're throwing in the humor in it so that we're not so much invested into it that by the time we get to the main show, we're not so as, you know, honestly, come on, think about it. It can depress you and get you tense.
Yeah, especially, you know, like the last, I'd say, three seasons of the show.
Yeah.
There have definitely been some very depressing elements of The Walking Dead. And this is lighter. But at the same time,
yeah, no, for sure.
You know, like when you have a guy fall asleep on the back of a semi, you know, and it's he's deep in Texas and he wakes up and he's in Mississippi. I'm sorry. Yes, I keep going to that. Or a hurricane where he's people
Rip Van Winkle.
Or the hurricane where people are, and by the way, since we were spared this hurricane in Tampa, I just want to, like, our deepest sympathies and condolences go out to the people in the Bahamas right now. Just some of the devastation that has happened in that country. I really feel very, you know, there's no words that can be used to express. I can only imagine the issues that essentially a good part of that country is going to have to be rebuilt from the ground up, I think.
Yeah.
So
totally.
Not to make this a bummer, but in many ways, I think, Dorian, brought on, a mini apocalypse or a localized apocalypse in a lot of ways. And, anyway, just the awful, but, anyway, let's move on.
All right. All right. Well, the next in the feedback comes from Dieta from Detroit, and she says, so the convoy is just driving around, burning up all the new found gas they have until they come across a place to set up shop. That should have made the mall the perfect place to set up camp until something else better was located. Charlie is a brat for doing that and jeopardizing the group because she doesn't want it to be like before. But when Nick and his mom had a good place for settling down, you sabotaged it and killed Nick? Girl, bye. Two hand waves. This storyline might have worked with someone else who we know didn't have a past like hers. Sorry, writers, not buying it. I think just Charlie in general, that has been an issue, at least as fans. Maybe, like, I mean, you know, maybe some people like her, I don't know, or maybe they see any kind of redeeming quality, but I feel like that Nick whole issue still sticks. And, you know, whenever she met Daniel, and it was kind of like, well, when Daniel finds out that she killed Nick, like, I don't know how that's going to play. But again, I think, you know, she somehow has redeemed herself, or as, like, you know, they've let that go. And, you know, Alicia had her little bottle episode with her, and they somehow, I guess, kind of got to a point where she moved on. So I think we just have to accept it. All right, she continues on. A lot of callbacks to the original show, The Walking Dead. The caravan sitting on top of the truck looking out. The rabbi in the synagogue and its members, Gabriel and his church members, which, you know, we just talked about that a lot. And continue. I said this in the last feedback, but you missed it, Brian. When Dwight let the Logan guy go trying to do the right thing, it was a bad idea. In the words of Rick Grimes, they always come back. And look who shows back up to terrorize our group. He's back. I got a question. So how is the group communicating on the walkie-talkies without Logan and his people hearing? They constantly jump in on the walkie-talkies, but you never see our people switching channels when they communicate. June said Sarah broke radio silence. And who is all in this convoy? Where's the rest of the group? No Daniel, no Luciana, no Isabel. She was with them, and why are they waiting on Morgan, Alicia, and Al Strand to find them? Where are they? Good question. I don't know exactly, like we were just like, LT. It's just like there's this whole distance and time thing that just gets totally just brushed aside, and we just, you know, like, they're obviously close enough to hear, you know, Charlie on the walkie, you know, to be like, you know, so that wherever they were close enough to where the synagogue was. But apparently they're close enough that they're getting close to Tank Town, you know, and, you know, it's kind of, you know, the whole deal about just, I think we just, or they're expecting us to just like not even be thinking about that or just accept it. I don't know.
Or they're building up for a blow up of the Tank Town.
Or something like that. Cause, you know, it is like they know Logan's listening to them. Cause they don't want to break radio silence. But yeah, it's like, aren't they just like, you know, I guess Logan's people could all have completely charged walkies on every single channel. And I don't know how many channels are on a walkie talkie. You know, it's like, I know it's more than 14. So, you know, it's like they could be just every hour we switch to this channel, every hour, you know, like, or if you do, you know, communicating or something, but it's just, there's.
Or maybe Wendell and the Mad Max kids from Beyond Thunderdome are actually looking to blow up the Hank world. And then they just get rid of all the gas.
Well, I mean, that's what, I mean, you don't know. It's like, well, we'll see with, you know, spoiler alerts, but I'm sure people have already saw it. The whole, like, well, the next episode is obviously going to be. So it's, you know, maybe they did ration enough gas that they can at least, you know, continue on if they lose it.
Who knows?
Yeah. All right. Well, she continues on. I'm still struggling with the season. I'm not happy with this episode at all. None of it makes sense. It just looks like they are chasing their tails, running in circles. Well, I think, again, that this is all leading up to whatever, you know, the main face-off is going to be. With Logan's,
yeah, it's
group.
All supplemental storylines just to get to that
right,
point.
Right. Well, that's so. What I was thinking too earlier. It's like Fear compared to, obviously, I would say pre-season 4, you know, it was this whole different kind of show about, you know, the Clarks and just like the family unit, you know, from the start of the apocalypse and this and that. But I think what possibly has changed, at least in my mind, is they have, like, you know, this stuff has been at least wrote, you know, scratched out on paper about like what their arc or where they're wanting to get to. We know there's a movie, we know there's this other, you know, third, you know, series that they're producing. That, yeah, this I'm feeling like Fear is definitely not the more serious version of, like, obviously the main show. It's just kind of the supplemental, you know, show that goes just kind of like, oh, let's have fun with this, let's do this and that. But it is pushing the story to a certain direction, and they've already have this idea of where they're going, because, you know, after season 6, there's definitely, I don't see how there could be a season 7 of Fear, but it will somehow neatly messily, you know, like
transition into the
right into the whatever show. This Walking Dead universe new universe thing goes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that kind of unfortunately really hurts the show, because then it just allows for sloppy writing, sloppy, like, just, oh, it doesn't matter. We'll just do this just to get it there. And, you know, it's like, as fans, you know,
it's not what, like, we're hating the show. We enjoy the show for right, what we right. get. It's just that some of the stories are a little bit sidetracked, in my opinion. It's not really, really bad tongue in cheek like it was with Z Nation. Come on, we're not seeing a guy who turns blue and is controlling zombies. We're not seeing him have an offspring that can control the zombies. Or all these things that went on in that was completely for humorous effect. I think they throw that the humor factor in just so that way we have something palatable before the main show comes, but giving a little bit of drama and story to each character, so that at least we're embracing with these particular characters for the show that And my feeling is eventually leading into this whole Walking Dead universe. And if the show ever kind of ends, like the Fear show, it will probably meld into the Walking Dead and then maybe into this spinoff show in some way.
Yes.
And then it'll be more serious at that point. So I think they realize they have something here. They still have a fan base, and I think that they still have the viewership and everything, and everybody is still entranced, and it's this whole universe. It just works out in the sense where, okay, it's the summer month. It's supposed to be the summer of fun, whereas with The Walking Dead, autumn comes and we get The Walking Dead and it gets to serious story plot.
Yeah. And they don't, this show doesn't seem to do enemies, you know, villains the same way either. I mean, like I mentioned already about Logan's people, they don't seem to like kill or anything like they do on,
it's like a bark, or it's like a dog with no, a bark with no bite.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you could even say the same kind of thing was true, at least to a certain extent, the Vultures last season, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, what's her face? Martha, you know, the garbage lady or whatever, filthy woman. Filthy woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think, by the way, I had to go back, and since she said I missed it, I had to go back. What she was talking about is something that was in her feedback, where she said, also, I applaud Dwight for doing it different, but in the words of Rick Grimes, they always come back. Beware, Dwight. And I don't know if it, and I don't know if that is also related to something else you'd said in that, but I don't know. I thought I said that. So if I didn't, sorry.
Is that a reference to like something this way comes, something wicked this way comes, you know, that old Stephen King book?
But it wasn't just Rick that said that though. It was Dawn. If you remember in Coda, when just before Beth got it, when they tried to do the exchange and Noah was going to come back to the hospital, Dawn reacted and said, they always come back. So that was also, but yes, Rick has said something like that as well. I think what Rick has said was they always, I don't remember. I have to go back and think about it. But I definitely remember that Dawn has said that in the past. That specific scene, because it was a memorable scene when death. Oh, that was bad. That was a terrible, not intended pun. But when Beth died in that awful scene, specifically, I remember Officer Dawn said that, and but it is true though that that guy Raleigh, of course he was going to go bad. I mean, you could see it right when it happened that was going to backfire, because he, like I said, he used the S word. That is not a nice word.
Yeah,
and that just told you everything you needed to know about the guy. He was a bad guy. So the other thing I was going to mention, I think you mentioned Isabella. And I think you're meaning Isabel. And I think you mean the other character in episode, The End of Everything. She went back to her group. She's not with the convoy. So she went back to the helicopter group in the helicopter.
She went to the Three Ring Circus.
Get to the chopper!
Yes. So, I don't know if that's who you meant, Dieta. But anyway, thank you so much for your feedback. let's move on to Glynis. She has a few points here. She, and this is the last bit of her feedback tonight. She says, June and Charlie must have been back together with the Vultures long enough to, quote, do what we've always done, unquote, and send the Walkers to overrun a place. Although in this case, they have changed, as it's not to force people out of their home, but to save others. I'll just stop there. I think what they were referring to is how they used to corral up the Walkers by using sound and music. I think that's what they were referring to, because that's exactly what they did. If you remember, like Ennis, I think it was, you see him driving around a bike and he had something playing on his,
with the radio.
Or yeah. Something. So I think that's how they've done. And we actually saw the wolves do that as well. If you recall, in The Walking Dead, used,
that speaker system thingy or
to crawl up the Walkers. Yeah. So, but that's what I think they were talking about. But yeah, send the Walkers to overrun a place. Yeah, I guess that's part of it, but I think it's more corral the Walkers. I wonder who killed the rabbi's congregation, as it seems too many to have just been from other Walker bites. Was it the Vultures before they encountered Charlie and later June? Oh, that's interesting.
I don't think
so. Or is it?
I feel like they're far enough away, though, from.
Maybe not. We don't know how far away they are. Or is it Logan or a bad, new bad entering the fray? I don't know. I mean, we've seen it before. All it takes is June's. Yeah. Well, starvation. June's daughter,
or sickness,
like,
or,
you know, somebody gets sick and early on in the apocalypse, they don't realize that any kind of death causes the zombie effect. So they're not prepared for it, and et cetera. So it could have been something as simple as that, because we've seen that happen many times.
Well, we saw that. Yeah. Like in the prison.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they could all been asleep and then, it started and then they all panicked and then you got Walkers coming and turning, you know, because we don't know how some people turn faster than others. But
and, you know, Madison, Alicia's group, you know, they realize this fairly early on, but not everybody, like if you remember, Rick's group did not realize this, or I guess Rick found out from Dr. Jenner, but the group in general didn't know it, because like when Michonne and Andrea end up with the governor there, it's the governor that tells them that, because if you remember Michonne, she was like all worked up because they killed one of the people in the helicopter, even though they hadn't been bitten, right? And he tells them that doesn't matter how, it's any way that you die. And of course, they know that later, but yeah, so that would be my leading reason for it. Anyway, moving on, she says, yes, also see the similarity to Gabriel and his church and congregation, which also got overrun in the end. These groups, both in The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead, destroy completely good dwellings.
This is why we can't have
exactly. I also noticed that when the rabbi went to where his congregation was being kept as Walkers, him looking through the glass at the Walkers reminded me of The Walking Dead and Gareth looking through the glass door at the trapped Walkers at the school. Oh, interesting. Where they were feasting on Bob's leg. Yes. Yeah, that was
tainted.
That was from the cold open of season 5, episode 3. Four walls and a roof. And
Or originally in the comic with Dale.
Oh, right, right. In both cases, in The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead, those respective Walkers overran the churches. So the rabbi looks as if he's not staying around with the group and is going to search for his lost faith, ! Which is a pity, as the actor was, of course, from House and later in Colony. That series I wish wasn't canceled after only 3 seasons. Yes, we mentioned that. He was in House too. I don't remember him in House, but now that you say that, Glennis, I guess.
I think he played a doctor.
Yeah.
Every once in a while in Spare Moments, but I do remember his face.
I watched House, but I tailed off in the last couple of seasons, so I don't know. Don't know if I remember him too well in that, but I vaguely remember him. But I definitely remember him from Colony. So Logan outwitted them with his plan to isolate the SWAT truck, which only Dwight suspected that there was an ulterior motive. Yeah, even John Dory didn't think of that. You'd think as a cop, he would have thought of that. But it's kind of like Daryl is sometimes a better detective than Rick was.
Yeah, he's a tracker.
Last point. So Wendell and the kids will need to lock and load for next week's episode. So maybe now he's free from NCIS New Orleans obligations to dedicate some screen time on Fear the Walking Dead. Yeah, in fact, that's apparently one of the reasons why he hasn't been on much. He was busy on that show. So I guess doing double duty. So.
Yeah.
I guess their shooting schedules kind of overlap, so he wasn't as available this season. But yeah, so anyway, that's it for our feedback. So let's move on. You guys don't have any other episode notes, it seems. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up?
No, we've already
pretty much talked about a lot of stuff.
So also worth mentioning, you know, we mentioned the Jewish part of it. We find out that Sarah Rabinowitz, so I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Does that mean that Wendell is also Jewish?
I would assume so. Come on.
Yeah.
Could be. They're brother and sister. Yeah. They're not. We don't know the story between their biological or how they are family, but they are family nonetheless. And I would assume that they were brought up in the same household and they both are Jewish.
You would definitely think so based on, you know, certain things that they've said.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't know if it's by birth or by adoption or whatever, but they're definitely brother or sister. So.
Yeah. And they are definitely brother and sister the way they talk.
Yeah.
yeah. Totally.
Yeah. And I love that whole concept.
Yeah. One thing I don't know if we ever mentioned before, but since we've been bringing this up about how other people have other names for walkers, we hear John Dory again mentioned calling him the past. He still calls him the past. He hasn't reverted to walkers, but something I don't know we ever talked about, but Sarah calls them munchers.
Yeah, and That's just another name added to this, but if you notice within this season, we've had several versions of the names of what they call the walkers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Growlers, stumblers. What did Wes call them last
biters
week?
Biters or?
No.
It wasn't biters. Was it biters? It might have been biters.
Eaters.
That's it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. It's good, though.
I think they're having fun with just because we're meeting all sorts of different people from who knows different walks of life. It, you know, people would have different names for
exactly
whatever.
Yeah. You would definitely expect that. And even, you know, within the, you know, allies there, they called them different. Like Alexandria called them roamers before they called them walkers. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the governor called them biters and things of that nature.
So there's so many different things.
Yeah.
The last thing I'll mention is I didn't really understand the title card this week. So we see the MREP, the back of it. Was that the light? You know, I forget what he called it, but I guess it's like the eternal light or something, but whatever.
Yeah, it's supposed to be the light of God to show your way. Yeah.
So is that what was lit up in the MREP?
I think so.
It must have been.
Yeah.
It could have been a representation of him, because at the very end, you see him standing in the back of the MRAP.
Yeah.
And talking to them. Yeah. And the whole focus in the very beginning of the show was Charlie helping him getting the light of God.
Yeah.
Back into the temple.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a representation of him bringing light back into the group.
Maybe. Yeah. All right. So that's it for this week's feedback. So let's move on to news, ratings, info, and whatnot.
What the hell is happening?
I have no idea.
Well, we are recording this on Tuesday night. Normally we have our ratings at this point, but whenever there's a holiday weekend, ratings are always delayed a day. So we don't have ratings for this week. So we will give the ratings for season 5, episode 12 next week, along with next week's ratings. I will say, though, that on TV by the Numbers, I did find that the Live Plus 3-day for last week was there, and Fear of the Walking Dead, Season 5, Episode 11, went up to a 0.7, which is up from last week's 0.43. Now, they only give one decimal place, so I hate that. But anyway, so I can't exactly say that that's 0.27, so it may be 0.74 or something. I don't know, but regardless, it did go up. They also had the Live Plus 7-day ratings for the previous episode, which was Season 5, Episode 10, 200 words per minute, and that went from a 0.4 to a 0.8, so it went up 100% over the 7 days. And, of course, no Talking Dead this week, so we don't have anything to talk about from that. Just a little info that I'll add about this episode. We did have, and again, I don't know if this is just available on AMC Premiere or if it's available on YouTube or AMC.com for everybody. I don't know, but there is about a 10-minute plus video on Inside Fear the Walking Dead Season 5, Living versus Surviving in the Apocalypse. And specifically, that video goes over the last 4 episodes discussing that topic over the last 4 episodes, and, you know, talks about the experience at the mall, the video found footage episode, the Alicia and beating Wes in the trees and all that, and of course this episode with everything that we see here with the rabbi and all that. So I thought it was interesting, worth watching if you have access to it. Two things that I'll mention in the news for this week. One is a nice thing, I guess, and that is Season 9 of The Walking Dead is already available on Netflix. So I don't know if it's still available on AMC.com. I know it was.
For free, it is.
Yeah, but now it's also available on Netflix for streaming. So if you want to watch it there, you've been waiting, there you go.
Or get it on Blu-ray.
or yeah, and it's also available on Blu-ray as well. The other kind of sad news, sorry to hear, but Kari Payton and his wife have filed for divorce. So first he loses his queen, and then he loses his real life queen.
Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah, so I don't know the specifics on that, but I know that there was a story that I posted on the Facebook group about it. So sorry to hear that, Kari Payton. I hear he's a great guy. So
yeah, he's really nice to meet, and I always suggest everybody to go meet him and say hi and welcome him.
Yeah. Okay, so that's it for this episode. So, Kyle, why don't you tell people how to interact with us?
All right. If you want to interact with us, we want to encourage you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at the handle @WalkingDeadGSM. To submit your theories and feedback, most people post in our designated episode thread on our Facebook group, and you can find us there at facebook.com/groups/WalkingDeadGSM. We'd like to encourage you to use our email address, and we have a new one, and it's walkingdeadtalkthrough@gmail.com. And if you use the old email, which is thewalkingdeadgsm@gmail.com, that still works, so we will get your feedback if you use that one.
Yeah, and we still plan to change the Twitter and the Facebook group URL, but we figured we'd wait until next hiatus, I think.
Yeah.
We'll keep it the way that it is unless we're told otherwise that we have to change it. So.
Well, yeah. And if you follow us in our Facebook group, then you'll definitely, you'll be.
Yeah. If you've joined, it will essentially not affect you in any way. Yeah. So.
Correct.
And our new feedback form, you can find that at talkthroughmedia.com/feedback. And you can also call us at 216-236-5449 if you want to leave us some awesome, voicemail. And that is temporary, but I guess Brian will.
Yeah,
we will change that soon. And if you also don't prefer to call that number, you could also call 845-350-2095. That's for the Panels to Pixels podcast, but you could also leave that any feedback there as well if need be, and I will be able to translate it over to this podcast.
Yep, we'll get an official number here
tomorrow night. I'm going to be working on that. So,
okay, cool. All right. Then the deadline for the next episode is set at our regular day and time. That's 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, Tuesday, September 10th. And we also would like you to go to our network's Facebook page, which is facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. We post all the, episode posts there too, but we would like you to go, like us there. And that's where anything network related, we'll definitely be posting information there always.
Yes. And we're saying that you can write a review there. So we want to encourage that. We've already gotten a few from people leaving some reviews there. So we want to encourage that. Like, it's a public page. So it's a place where we can share content that can be shared. So
yeah.
I want to encourage some people that haven't done this to do so. If you subscribe to us through Apple Podcasts, help us out by giving us a rating or review. It has been over a year, at least in the US, since we last had a review on Apple Podcasts. So I'd really like to see us get to another review on, especially since we've made this change for the new network, so it would help us out. So if you use any podcast client, whatever you choose, just remember to subscribe to us. That'll allow you to get new episodes when they come out. And if your podcast client, like Apple Podcasts, allows you to write a review, like I know Stitcher does, and several like CastBox, Podcast Republic, etc., allow you to send comments to us, by all means, send us a comment. That'd be a great way to let other people know that you enjoy us. And I'll also say that we continue to be working on the website over the weekend. I corrected a problem on the homepage where certain episodes weren't showing up. That has been fixed. And there was also a problem with the all-inclusive feed, which is right now, it's just basically this podcast and the Star Trek Discovery podcast. When the Picard podcast starts, it'll also pick up episodes for that. And as we bring up new shows, everything will go into that one. But there was a problem with that feed. And I was able to finally figure out after I looked at my Apple Podcast sign up, that was the problem. That was the wrong URL. Oops. So anyway, that's been fixed. And I tested that myself. You can subscribe to us through Apple Podcasts or iTunes if you use that on PC. That's now working. And also worth saying, we haven't had an episode come out lately of the Star Trek Discovery podcast, but hopefully in the next month before we start up on season 10 of The Walking Dead, we will do another episode of that, as well as the brand new podcast that Ruthie and I are doing called the Star Trek Picard Cast. And I posted on the Facebook group this week, actually today as we're recording it, the artwork for that podcast. And our friend Lara, who of course has been on this podcast, she was the one that did the beautiful artwork for the podcast, and really excited to get that going. So hopefully in the next 3 or 4 weeks, Ruthie and I will get the very first episode of that out. That's just what I'm shooting for. So, and also worth mentioning that those two podcasts have their own Patreon, and that is at patreon.com/Brian and Ruthie. So help us out. We've got a few people that have joined up, and we are going to be doing our first call-in show later this month. So that's it for that.
Awesome. And you can listen to me on Panels to Pixels on the Next Level Radio Network podcast network. Currently, we're in the process of doing Preacher, season 5. Wait, what season are we in?
Four.
Yeah. It's hard to tell. It's so weird. Yeah. Steve and I are having a lot of good laughs on this. I'm hoping everybody has actually been listening. The actual voicemail phone number I gave you was for that particular podcast, but you could actually send feedback from this podcast to there. I'll bring it over. If you have any ideas and thoughts on the Preacher podcast or the particular episodes that come up on this coming Sunday, please feel free to throw in your ideas and thoughts. That'd be amazing. Steve and I are really looking for people.
How's the response been?
A lot of people check out the Facebook page, but they really don't leave any messages or comments or feedback. I just posted something recently about The Crow. We're going to do a review of the movie The Crow because it's in its 25th anniversary. So someone sent in some feedback regarding that. We're looking to have a few people on there other than Steve and myself. So Rima Joe, Sean Henniger, and I'm hoping Lara would actually help us out with that too. And it's going to go throughout the whole idea of The Crow, where it was 25 years ago, comic book to movie, and its legacy ever since then, because apparently people are still intrigued about that movie and that comic book. So apparently people are interested in the idea and the thought of that. So I'm hoping that people tune in to that, because I have a lot of comic book detail, a lot of missing information based upon the movie when it came out, what had happened to Brandon Lee during the actual movie, yeah, the sad passing of him. So I accumulated a lot of information regarding this, and I think it's going to be a good round table on that.
Mm-hmm.
So
sounds good.
Yeah. Sounds cool.
Yeah.
All right, so our next episode is for Season 5, Episode 13 of Fear the Walking Dead, Leave What You Don't, which, of course, is part of their little slogan that they say, take what you need, leave what you don't, mm-hmm, help who you can. I think it's the third part that they've added.
Yeah.
We don't know who has written or directed this one, but the description is as follows. Logan's motives are revealed. Mm-hmm. Sarah, Dwight, and Luciana negotiate for the sake of the mission. Strand and Alicia race to the aid of a new survivor in a familiar place. A dangerous threat emerges, and all of those things deserve... maybe it's
get to the chopper.
All right, so until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And I'm Mark.
And this is Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.